Welcome to Rewilding Love. This season is with a couple on the brink of divorce.
This is episode number 9 with Mateo asking for the how-to guide.
I always felt like we were really passionate and affectionate and loved each other.
I may have just made the biggest mistake of my life.
It's a ride at a funfair. We go up and down. We are in up mood and we love each other, and we go into a low mood and we hate each other.
See, for the most part, I'm Pirates of the Caribbean, where there's only one drop and one rise, okay? Everything else is pretty f***ing flat in my life.
In any given moment, his vibe just changes, and it's like, boom, like, you hate me all of a sudden.
There isn't a magic how-to, but there is a power that comes from recognizing where experience comes from. Like, that's it.
She may be all blood and gusto. Blood and gusto, is that the right term?
I don't think so.
What I think I've experienced is at least a pin drop of that bliss of just living in the moment.
When he's not in judgment, when he's present, he's going to be with her in a whole different way.
In a sense, it's a jump in consciousness. It's a jump in awareness.
That's what rewilding is. It's about uncovering who we are and seeing what's been there all along.
You are listening to Rewilding Love with me, Angus Ross.
And me, Rohini Ross.
Rewilding Love is a podcast about relationships.
We believe that love never disappears completely in relationships. It can always be rewilded. Listen in as we guide a real couple back to their natural state of love.
Relax and enjoy the show.
But it has been much more peaceful.
It has.
I don't know if it's the fact that there's no TV and there's no... like reality TV or whatever. Maybe it's the silence up here. I don't know what it is, but it's been phenomenal so far.
Oh, cool.
Even taking the drive, talking to her, it's been a breeze.
Well, that's great. So there's a better feeling between you, would you say?
Definitely a better feeling. I mean, obviously, right, it's not 100% yet, but it's the best it's been in a really, really long time. That's for damn sure.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. Very, very happy thus far.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, what I think is most important about that segment is just how powerful it is when people allow themselves to let their mind settle. And that's why this format that we're working with the two of them in is so helpful, is because they've taken time out of their life. They've had a little bit of time in the peace and quiet of Topanga, and already he's feeling the benefits of that. I'm not saying it's not also the benefit of some of the insights that he's getting in the session, but you can hear how he's slowing down.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to people talk about the benefits of travel, about kind of being away from the habitual norm. So they don't have the TV on. They don't have to come home and stick the TV on. And really all they have to do is just smell the roses. And that in itself allows the mind to settle. So it's good that he's acknowledging that and realizing that he gets into a more peaceful state of mind, and that their relationship benefits from that.
And that's the rewilding process in action, because we're not doing it. They're being rewilded by themselves. They're being rewilded by their natural state. We're setting it up so that they can have the experience, and we're pointing towards their true nature, but the rewilding is happening from within them.
Yeah, I mean, they're already programmed to flourish, and without the normal habitual controls, that's exactly what, you know, you'd anticipate happening.
I love the way we finished up last session. He said, yeah, I just got a B.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, that's it kind of sums it all up in a way. It's not trying to really figure it out. It's just trying to like just be in that feeling.
Yeah, and not getting attached to a specific idea and trying to hold on to it and defend it. I mean, I don't know. We were just driving and having casual conversation where it could have in the past taken a different direction, but... It was just cool.
Yeah.
It was pretty breezy.
Yeah, I think that riding that feeling, and I guess in terms of my very limited experience of surfing, it's kind of like you get a feel for it, and then you stay on that wave. But as if you try and like figure things out through your intellect, like where am I supposed to be positioning my limbs, etc. Mm-hmm. Usually you end up in the drink.
Yeah.
Isn't that the case?
Very true. And I'm just hoping that I can kind of take what, you know, we've been talking about this week, can extend that and almost have like a build, like a tunnel to this, you know, to this type of life, and revert down this road rather than, you know, the roads of negativity. Like, you know, this is seems much more enjoyable. It's very cool if I can always be, you know, if I can construct this tunnel and fortify the walls and everything to stay in this tunnel, that'd be a really great approach to life.
Yeah, that's kind of how I see it. I see, for me, you know, I'm hesitant about like sort of trying to sort of create techniques and shy away from the sort of magic bullets that people always want to like ask you about. But in a sense, for me, it does feel like building a muscle. And I guess in terms of what you're saying, it's like, yeah, you're creating new neural pathways. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like in having the awareness itself that I think begins the process of creating, rewriting the stories that perhaps have been present for us for a long time.
So I hear myself using this word be, which when I first heard it, I thought, what on earth am I saying there? And then I realized what I'm pointing to is this idea of being present. And it's so interesting to realize that when we become present, then we experience well-being. When we become present, then we're in the moment, and we're not really allowing ourselves to be subjected to the noise of our busy mind. So he's had this experience driving to the coast or wherever they were going, and has this moment where he really anchors himself in the present, and lo and behold, there's the well-being, because the busy mind is not giving that chance to engage.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. And I can hear in what he's sharing that he's had the taste of that, and now his intellect is getting involved and trying to figure out, well, how do I get more of that? What's going to happen when I leave here? I need to build tunnels, like he's saying. And it's understandable because of our conditioning. We think that we need to do something to maintain understanding. And it doesn't mean that there isn't a learning curve involved, which you point to. There is a learning curve involved, but the seeing is what's important. And once he sees what you're talking about right now, the experience of well-being, the experience of that peace of mind is actually the result of having a quiet mind, that's just the natural byproduct of that, then we get more and more respect for just the seeing, because that's what it is. We need to see it. And in the understanding of how that works, then we're on the learning curve of having more of that experience.
Yeah, it is funny to think that, you know, he had this moment where he could see how his well-being or the well-being of their relationship is in that moment of presence. And then reflecting on that, you can see then his ego getting involved, his intellect getting involved and trying to build this time tunnel into a point where he can quickly access that in the future. That's the intellectual machinery getting into gear and figuring out, yeah, how do I package and repurpose this? When really, all along, it was just a falling into. It was an understanding. It was an awareness.
And that is our natural state. It's not a, how do I get there? It's, how do I get out of my own way that takes me out of what's my natural state?
Very good.
So what do we do in moments where you see that you're drifting into a low state of mind and you're beginning to interpret someone else's actions in a negative way? Like, how do you step back? How do you allow that person to digest kind of what you're going through and the reason why you want to step back? And also, you know, is it possible to coach someone themselves through that? I mean, I know we're doing it right now, but how can you momentarily be like, hey, you're running, your mind's running, let's just calm down for a minute?
We always get the how-to question, don't we?
Yes, we always do, in some way, shape, or form, get that how-to question.
But I always think it's a good sign when we get the how-to question, because it means that they're seeing something and experience something, But they, like I said earlier, they're just wanting to grab onto it and figure it out.
Yeah, it's a positive sign because they're expressing a want or a desire for that magic carpet ride to well-being, whatever that looks like.
And the other thing that I notice in his question is that he's not asking just how to for myself. He's also asking how to for Alicia, which is of concern because it never helps when you're trying to coach your partner when they're upset.
Never a good idea. And usually that coaching looks like the other person jumping on a soapbox and being dictatorial and being judgmental first and foremost.
Yeah, it never goes down well when we point out our partner's low mood to them.
Yeah, I think that the judgment is the key word here because I think that that really is not coming from a place of love or compassion. It's coming from a point of view of like, yeah, you're doing this wrong.
So he's had an experience of peace. He's enjoying it and he's wanting more of it. In this next segment, he really lays it on the line like he wants his step-by-step guy to be a good husband, which is a good thing that he wants to be a good husband.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess I'm just looking for like a step, like step one, this is what you do. So, because kind of want to be prepared for those moments, that way you can have a plan of action of how to diffuse a situation or remove yourself from the situation without that other person feeling like you're just being neglectful.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you can't diffuse the situation. I would caution against trying to diffuse the situation in terms of what she's going through, because she's already gone crazy. Mm-hmm. She's already in crazy land. So if you go in there and try to fix the situation, I'm sure you've had the experience, and I can think of many times in the past. I think it's pretty much a male thing that we want to try to go in and fix.
Yeah.
And we crash and burn every single time, I feel, more. Yeah. 9 out of 10 times.
Yeah, they want to vent, they just want to talk.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like they're in crazy land, we can't go there.
Yeah.
So don't even try. That in itself, I think, will there will be huge dividends in that alone. So the step would be just like, okay, she's in crazy land. I'm starting to get a sense of compassion more and more, where that would feel so against the grain. It wouldn't be even my framework of understanding, 5 years ago, that I could even get to a place of compassion when she's in crazy land. I mean, I'll be in exactly the same space that you were when you came in. She's in crazy land and she's a fucking total bitch. Yeah. I want nothing to do with her. But now it's more a case like, yeah, she's in crazy land and she's like, she'll be in there for as long as she needs to be in there, but I don't want any part of it.
Well, I hear you indulge yourself in some gender stereotyping there.
I did. I knew you were going to pull me up on that. And obviously, that's that's quite the generalization. It was in the process of building rapport.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You're going to be able to get away with it by saying you're building rapport.
That's my get out of jail card on that one.
Well, other than that, I did have a bit of a reaction to that, I will be honest. But what I really hear you pointing him to is the importance of compassion. And you didn't sound that compassionate about me either. But again, I put that down to you building rapport with him. Or maybe there's something you need to tell me. But in terms of the importance of how to navigate those challenging situations when somebody's reactive and they're not behaving at their best, they're behaving at their worst, what I hear him in the classic how-to question is like, please, Angus, give me my step-by-step guide to navigating those situations when my wife has lost her mind.
I know. And it's almost like he thinks I have a secret that I'm keeping away from him. I've got some sort of magic box or genie or lamp that some genie's going to emerge if I just give him the right way to rub it. and that's just not how it is. And I listened to that. I listened to that exchange, and I still feel like I would like to think today I would do a more nuanced approach to it in how I would talk about compassion. You know, that magic bullet that he's looking for really is about understanding and awareness, that he just has to show up and see his wife's psychological innocence and not take that personally. And that in itself will give her a whole entirely different read on the situation. And I'm sure that the reactivity will evaporate in the presence of his compassion. So if ever there was a magic bullet, that would be it. But, you know, our ego has us inclined to remain defended and not be vulnerable in that way.
Well, it comes back to the basis of what we're sharing with them, which is where experience comes from. Because if we remember that our experience comes from the thoughts that we're identifying with, that's what we feel, they don't come from the other person. When we remember that and when we see it and when we know it, we don't take their behavior personally. But when we forget that, we think that our suffering in the moment is coming from them when they're behaving badly. And when it looks like it's coming from them, we take it personally, we get caught up, and then we get reactive too. So there isn't a magic how-to, but there is a deepening and understanding and seeing the power that comes from recognizing where experience comes from. Like, that's it. And that it's in the seeing of that that the ripple effect is that we don't take other people's behavior personally. The ripple effect is that when we see that someone's upset is their state of mind, it's not about us, then compassion is the natural byproduct that comes out from that. But it's not a technique. We don't give you a skill set that's going to make you be compassionate. It comes from genuinely understanding the role of thought and the role of state of mind. And when we see that role in our lives, it's so much easier to not take our thinking seriously. It's so much easier to not take another person's thinking seriously. It's so much easier to allow for the humanness of another person in our life and to have compassion for them. And I want to be clear, I've emphasized it in other episodes, but when I'm saying that, I'm not condoning any behavior. I'm not saying that all behavior goes. I'm not saying that you have to stay with someone who has behavior that is abusive or that is you find intolerable. But I am saying that behavior is a reflection of their state of mind. It's not a reflection of you. And that the more you see that, like in this situation with Alicia Mateo, he wasn't seeing that her upset was a reflection of her state of mind. He was taking it very personally. And all of a sudden, he's getting more quiet. He's feeling more of that peace inside of himself. And in that peacefulness, he's getting more perspective on her behavior. And now he's saying to you, but how do I keep my perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to be clear, I was talking colloquially when I was saying how you were a bitch and she was crazy. I was really, that was my way of pointing to the fact that her behavior is a reflection of her state of mind. And it can only be seen in those terms. And if you see it in those terms, you can have compassion and see the psychological innocence. You don't have to take it personally. So I just wanted to, just for the record, just point that out.
I understand that, but I'm glad you pointed that out. But yeah, that was your way again of connecting with him.
Yeah.
I know that if I just stay silent while she's having these moments, then I'm being neglectful. If I'm not engaged, it seems like if I'm not engaging, let's just say she has an issue with someone at work, if I'm not, yeah, you know what, fuck that person, let's go, let's slash their tire, right? If I'm not going full in on her side, then I'm being neglectful. So how do you, you know, want to, in the mindset of being able to preserve this level-headedness, right, and you know that you don't want to be involved at all in this conversation because it's not helping at all. Your mentality or their mental state, it's not helping anyone. So how do you become a supportive spouse not wanting to be a part of that conversation and knowing that if you're not a part of that conversation, that you're going to be viewed as neglectful. And also, if you want to take part in the conversation so you're not this asshole that's, you know, only giving time when it's only convenient for you, how do you make sure you don't prolong that conversation so you're just stuck in that shitty-ass conversation and you're just thinking and counting down the seconds like, God, I wonder when this is going to be over?
So I don't know if this comes up a lot for you, Angus, in your sessions, but I definitely hear this frequently from clients, not just clients that we're doing our couples work with, but individual clients too, where they feel that their partner doesn't have their back, and they really wish their partner was on their side. And it's expected that their partner will get the knives out if they have the knives out, and that if their partner doesn't do that, it feels like there's a lack of compassion and understanding. And that's what I hear Mateo saying in this segment, that he doesn't always or doesn't necessarily want to get involved in the reactivity, but if he steps back and doesn't engage, then he feels like he's not being a good husband, he's not being supportive. And for me, it's about making a distinction between holding space for someone, having compassion for their emotional experience. To me, that's what's needed when someone's reactive. They want to be heard, they want to be understood. They feel the benefit of empathy and compassion. They don't need you to get into the fight with them. They might think that they'll like that, but it actually doesn't help in the long run. And what really does make a huge difference, which is what he, I think, has struggled with because he has so much judgment or has had so much judgment toward Alicia, is he's really struggled with having compassion for her. And he, at this point, hasn't had the experiential knowing of what happens in relationship with her when he shows up with empathy, when he shows up with compassion. Like, that goes such a long way.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and I hear this a lot within the framework of our coaching work, is that a husband or a wife finds themselves in the unusual position within the context of an argument, being both the allied forces and the enemy all at the same time. And so they are the enemy in the sense where, you know, the judgment is very prevalent and has been meted out in no uncertain terms. And so, and then, you know, the allied forces is problematic when, in the face of all that fire, they suddenly start running for the hills and bidding a hasty retreat. And so I find myself hearing many clients say how, you know, that they feel like, yeah, this is a situation that really is going nowhere. I need to go elsewhere until I settle down, let's say. But their concern is that, you know, yeah, they need to look after themselves and sure, settle down. But they've had so many experiences where they felt like, yeah, I need to run for the hills now. And their partner has said, you know what, you're abandoning me. Why can't you be here? Why can't you listen to me? And so I guess ultimately what we're saying is that, you know, at times it's good to put the oxygen mask on ourselves first and head for the hills if we really feel like we can't be present and be neutral. But the real game changer is to be present, to be at the very least neutral. But the ideal scenario is if we can be present and be coming from a place of compassion, and that will only come through us seeing their psychological innocence based on their current behavior being a reflection of their state of mind. You know, we see the innocence in that, and then it tells a whole different story. And that's actually a very powerful position to be in.
It is, and you're right. It has a huge impact on relationship. And I was called out on this by one of our daughters in terms of my tendency to disconnect when her anger is being directed toward me. I would be the one that would be running for the hills in my high-minded manner, thinking, well, I'm not getting involved because I don't want to be reactive and I don't want to lose my cool, and it would be better for me to disengage from this situation, which is all true. But then exactly what you said, she's like, but you're abandoning me. And as a mom, I'm like, well, I don't want to be abandoning my daughter. That's not good. And so she forced me to look at how do I dig deeper within myself so that I can be present with her when she's upset and angry with me and not run for the hills, because that's what she's asking for. She's telling me that's what she's needing. And it really helped me see a blind spot where I wasn't holding space for her in a way that I would want to be able to. That what it did was it forced me to not take her personal attacks personally. And I can't say I can do this all the time, but I got much better at being able to realize it was her state of mind talking and stay present and love her and be compassionate and try to listen and hear what was trying to be conveyed. Not in a way where I'm feeling like I'm, you know, putting myself in the face of abuse, because I, if I'm not taking it personally, I'm okay. And so it was a big game changer in our relationship, and it was a big game changer inside of myself, realizing that it is actually possible to not take personal attacks personally, right? Like, you don't behave the way that she does, so I'm not having to practice that skill with you. But it does feel like a superpower within myself to be immune to that.
Yeah, and in that situation, again, you know, we can't reiterate this point enough, is that when the person is out of balance, the other person is out of balance, and we're not taking it personally, we're not buying in to their corrupt thought system, as it were, but we're not coming from a place of judgment. We're not even judging their corrupt thought system. We're actually having compassion for their suffering. And that, in that sense, it is a superpower. In that sense, is actually we are in a position of you know, impenetrability, in a sense. It was only ever us, if we decided to take that personally, that's causing the suffering in that moment.
Yeah. And this next section really looks at that even more, because we get to see where Mateo really has a blind spot about what he's seeing with Alicia in terms of the complaining. And so, you know, let's play that part.
I don't complain because I realized how shitty it made people feel.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself,
yeah,
and internalizing, like, okay, what does it sound like if someone were to complain all the time? And I feel like there are people in this world that need to hear that.
Yeah.
They need to hear from someone else other than their spouse so they don't hold that resentment. But,
right.
I mean, that was one of the greatest pieces of advice I ever got, because it carried me through, I mean, until today. I just don't complain.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
You know, and maybe that kind of caused some hardship with the depression that I may have experienced, because I wasn't complaining about it and I wasn't being open about it. But at the same time, like, I don't know, there was a positivity from not bitching all the time.
Yeah.
Yes, there was complaining within my own mind at times, but for the most part...
Yeah, that's so interesting. This is bringing up something for me too, because I feel like I lived a lot of my life being a complainer.
Well, you're British, so...
I guess I'm British, yeah. And I think through this understanding, I've kind of like started to see how that creates this sort of environment that for the people that are around me that is really unpleasant. But in a sense, it's kind of like, in terms of what, and I could be off base with this, I'm just going to throw this out there, but it's something to throw out there because I feel like I have done the same thing, is when you try to get a handle on, let's say, that aspect of ourselves that wants to complain, like there are neural pathways around that are very well developed for me over years and years. It's like a passed down from father to son, or it's probably one of those things. So my moany, complainy side is just like, ugh, that's, you know, I see that when I see other people I'm around who moan and complain. It's like, oh yeah, that's what I do, but I do it 10 times worse. And then it's like, oh, I don't want to be that person. But then it's like that part of ourselves, that there's that disgruntled, dissatisfied part of ourselves that wants to go and like look for another way, to look for another outlet. And it could be that we do that in our relationship, in terms of like, if we're complaining internally, we're creating our own movies about our spouse. And I did that with Rohini for years. You know, when we first got together, I was kind of the mellow, I saw myself as a kind of mellow, happy-go-lucky guy. And she would always say how, like, when I got married and before we got married, you were so kind of laid back and cool. And then when we got married, you turned into this kind of maniac. And it was like over the course of the time, I realized that that's what I did. I think I got wind of the fact that I don't want to be this moany, complainy guy. And then I kind of like directed all my efforts kind of, not consciously, but in creating these stories about her. That she became the focal point of that part of me that needed to somehow vent.
This is a really great example of you using your own personal experience to start to make this point to Mateo, because, you know, my sense is if you had gone at this directly with him, he probably would have got defensive and not been able to hear you. And so basically he's saying he doesn't complain, but as we can hear from these sessions, he's got a lot of complaints. And so he can't handle Alicia's complaints because he's full of his own complaints, in a sense that her complaining destabilizes him and he's not really owning the fact that he's a huge complainer himself. He's got this idea like, I don't complain outwardly, so I'm not a complainer, but he's living in this litany of complaints in his head. And I think if you had gone at that straight on and tried to point out his blind spot, it wouldn't have landed. But you instead go into this story about your own personal experience with it, and I can see how that gets him, you know, to listen and to hear from your point of view. And then in this next part, you know, you continue on related to judgment, and actually he's able to recognize that within himself, which I think is so powerful.
Well, do you see how strategic I was back there? Because ultimately I didn't want to come out. I mean, he probably has no sense of that psychological term projection. But I still felt like that's not something I'm going to explain to him at this point. But I want to somehow give him a sense that there is this part of himself that he's not even aware of, that he dislikes, that he's finding he's seeing in Alicia that is this enormous problem. And it's the pot calling the kettle black.
The judgment of other people, that's something that I really don't like.
Yeah, but also be aware that, you know, the judgment that you've had from her is really no different than the judgment she's having for other people.
Absolutely, and that's self-reflecting, like, hey, man, you're doing this thing too, right?
Yeah.
You're doing this self-fulfilling prophecy of, hey, yeah, you know, Andrew back in the day told you not to complain, and you don't complain out loud, but in your mind you do, and, right, it's no different than what Michelle's doing. The only thing is I'm just not, you know...
kind of doing it internally.
Yeah, whatever. And, like, the same feeling that she is feeling, I'm feeling just for myself, I'm not allowing other people. So, I mean, what's really the difference? The only thing is I'm being polite to you because I'm not bitching.
Yeah.
Right? But internally, I'm just as shitty.
Well, that's a good awareness to have. That's a really good awareness to have.
So to me, what you set up in that transparent way is what led to him actually being able to see for himself. It's not you telling him this. He's realizing it. He's the one saying, what's the difference? I'm doing it too. Who am I to judge her for what she's doing? And so that awareness, when you say that's a really good awareness, that is such a powerful awareness to have, to recognize that he's doing to himself what he feels like she's been doing to him, that he's actually the one that's been doing it to himself.
Yeah, I mean, this is an incredible awareness, and the implications of this are huge, because he now gets a sense of how he's showing up in the relationship. Yeah, she may be all blood and guster. Blood and guster, is that the right term?
I don't think so. I've never heard that before.
What is it? But you know what I mean.
Is it bluster? Something bluster?
Something in bluster. I thought it was blood and... Maybe it's blood and guts, but it's something in bluster.
You're mixing two idioms.
Anyway, you know what I mean. She's inclined to wear her heart on her sleeve. And yet he's showing up with this sort of very probably palpable feeling of judgment, which is probably even more prevalent to her than her being all blood and guster.
What is that term?
But so to have a sense of that and to realize that, yeah, he's doing exactly the same thing inside his head that she's doing vocally, I think that will be a game changer.
Yeah, and the recognition that judgment is harmful to the relationship as well as to himself is key. Him seeing that is going to allow him to let go of it. It's going to allow him to not live in the feeling of that, which ultimately he is the one that's suffering most from that. Like, as he said earlier, when he's on that drive, he's in a beautiful feeling. He's not got a lot on his mind. You have him then recognize when he's got all this judgment on his mind, he does not have a beautiful feeling.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes to show how judgment right across the board is toxic.
Yeah, and I think you really did a beautiful job of emphasizing that to him with the example you shared with him about the work that we've done when we've gone into prisons.
Yeah, no, thank you.
We would go into this community and we're not going in there to judge whatever, you know, whatever they've done, whatever heinous crime they're guilty of, we're not judging them for that behavior. We're kind of like valuing them as a human being. They had an unfortunate circumstance, and rightly so, they should be, you know, having to face the consequences of that, but that's not something that we're going to judge them for. So we go in with that really kind of very much rooted in our minds. And so this is a male prison, and over the course of 2 days, and we do this over the weekend, we have these interactions with these guys, but we are not judging them at all. So they are just so not used to that. They spent a lifetime of being judged. That's just kind of like, these are people who have done terrible things and are in prison for the long haul. You know, some of them have been there for 40 years. But there's something really interesting about finding yourself in this environment where, yes, society would probably want to program you into thinking that these guys are all miscreants and to be, you know, someone that, you know, you should keep a good distance from. But by virtue of the fact that we're not judging them and we're interacting with them at that level, their heart's really open. They're like, they're finding for the first time that they can actually speak in a very truthful and honest way about who they are as human beings, because we're interacting at the human level. And over the course of these 2 days, there's this just beautiful, just sort of, I don't know, I want to call it like an energy. There's an atmosphere in the room. It's just kind of well-being in action. It's like there's just no judgment in the room. In an environment where judgment is for them, that's a common theme throughout the whole of their adult lives. Mm-hmm. And they have this experience where that's no longer a part of the equation. Then they can just really be themselves. And it's just like there's something. Everybody just settles into this sort of beautiful frequency in a way. But again, that's just for me another great reference point. It's like, yeah, that's kind of like where we probably should be hanging out as human beings. Mm-hmm. But for all the crap that we make up and all the judgment that comes with that crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the judgment that comes with the narratives that we create.
Boom. That's my turn to say it.
Boom.
Did I do it right? Well, to me, that's a mic drop moment when he sees the impact judgment has on his relationship with his wife. Like, he's seeing that. He's putting the dots together. That's so powerful because judgment is so toxic to relationships. And the judgment comes from within. It's not about the other person. And so if he's living in his thinking of judgment, he's living in the feeling of that. And he's then behaving toward her based on all of that's going on within himself. When he's not in judgment, when he's not identifying with those thoughts, when he's present, he's going to be with her in a whole different way.
Yeah, I mean, judgment is I was going to say it's the flip side of presence, but it's the A side.
What's that mean?
Well, when I, you know, this will show my age, you know. You had, when you would buy a 45 record.
At least you're not talking about eight tracks.
There'd be an A and a B side. Okay. So a musician would put out, you know, an A and a B side to their 45 record.
I was around when they had 45 records.
And you know that there was an A and a B side.
Yes.
So the hit would be on the A side, and on the B side would be, you know, something that was very obscure and unknown, more, unless you were the Beatles, of course.
Right.
Of course, it was, you know, A and B were pretty much on the same level. So A side is always that place of compassion, you know, being able to be present. And the B side is judgment, which would be the flip side of presence. Should I say? And it's so good now that he's looking in the direction of being present and sees the value there, and that the flip side is you know, at its worst is judgment. You know, we can be off we can be off with our imaginary friends and be thinking about something else. That's a whole other way that we might not be present with our partner. But when we're not present and we're in a place of judgment, that has a very potent negative effect.
It does. And the next part we're going to listen to really shows how during this time together, he's getting a taste of what it feels like to be present again.
I really haven't even been trying. It's just, I've been lately today, right, taking the drive of, I haven't created a story in my mind. It's literally that what I think I've experienced is at least a pin drop of that bliss of just living in the moment, which was really nice because I'm not there sitting in the car and thinking about the narrative I've created or devising a new one. It's just kind of been like, yeah, I'm driving through this canyon right now, going to the beach and got my chick in the passenger seat and everything's
that's awesome.
Creepy right now.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on, but, you know, I do risk analysis for a living, so there's going to be a fucking speed bump at some point. Yeah. That's why I'm still kind of interested in, you know, creating a storyline of how, you know, a step of how to handle a tantrum or how to handle a negative situation that I don't want to be a part of. I mean, that's innate in me is, hey man, if you're walking down the street and there's some guy that starts following you and it's dark, this is what you do, right? I kind of want that sort of thing for every situation in my life, and being in my relationship and having experience, like, this would be a nice place to have like an owner's manual.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he's still harping on about this need for there to be a process or a technique or an owner's manual. He's not trusting that we can just leave it all down to understanding. And I guess the ego will never be satisfied with that anyway. The ego will never feel that that's enough until we have, I guess, an experience where we get a reference point that, you know, that this is how it works. But, you know, I don't know how long it's going to take for that penny to drop. But you can see him still trying to sort of finagle something out of that secret box that he imagines that I have, where I'm keeping this magic technique.
He doesn't realize that it's experiential learning and that the only way he's going to learn is through the doing. He can't figure it out ahead of time. That the more he's present and in the moment, the more he's got access to his wisdom, and he'll be responsive. And to the degree that he's caught up in his conditioning and his programming, the less access he has to his wisdom in the moment. And that's about as much of an owner's manual as I could give him.
Yeah. I mean, this sort of whole idea of wisdom to him is just feels so intangible. It's like, how do you explain how, like, a bird flies south or migrates south in the winter, and it's just purely acting on instinct? And he, you know, here we are human beings. We'd come along like, yeah, we need to have a map. We need to map out all the coordinates to get from A to B. He can't just rely on his wisdom. His intellect is telling me, yeah, no, I need something tangible here. I need a roadmap. I need my compass points.
Yeah, he doesn't trust presence as being all that's needed.
Yes, just way too mystical in his imagination or in his mind.
Well, we'll see where we get to next.
Yeah.
I mean, I really feel like you saw something in the last session. Things kind of shifted for you. So there's something in that. I would encourage you to look more in that direction, because it wouldn't help you for me to give you a checklist of things to do, because it was just like, it would probably make the situation worse. I don't know, for whatever reason, I'm just thinking of this friend of mine who's a coach in London. You familiar with soccer and the Premiership?
Yeah, come on.
Okay, so well, that's good. I knew you were a good man.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was coaching this guy. He was a centre forward, and this team were languishing at the bottom of the table at a time where there was about to become this huge financial package was coming to the Premiership. So if your team was going down, you were in shit creek. It was the worst possible time to go down into the second division. So the owners, I guess, and the powers that be at the club had got on board all these psychologists and like were trying to do anything to avoid relegation.
Yeah.
And so they had this guy working with these psychologists, and they just filled his head with techniques and things to do. And it just made the situation 10 times worse. And so this friend of mine comes along, and they're kind of at their last resort. I can't remember exactly how he got the gig. But then he just like started pointing him in this direction. You know, it's all about, you know, it's about being in the moment. It's about being in, you know, it's not like having this whole laundry list of things to do. You know, you just got to just trust that it's in you. It's innate within you. And for whatever reason, however he articulated this understanding and however he pointed to this understanding, that guy who was, you know, he took the penalties and he missed every penalty up until that point, just suddenly realized that, yeah, those psychologists, I'd go up and take a penalty and I'm like, my mom's going crazy. Like, you know, I'm trying to think of all the things I'm supposed to do. And when I took that off the table, everything was peachy. And so like, they came out, you know, he became the top scorer. They came out of the relegation zone and, you know, and the rest was history. I think it's so cool. So I would be very reluctant to sort of give you things to do. In a sense, you don't want to do anything. You want to see what to do for yourself.
Again, it goes back to that surfing analogy.
It does.
You know, let's just go. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, just, you know, do yeah. too much, you do it too little.
It is.
Just go do it.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, well, wasn't, and in itself, that will bring you back to your equilibrium, because like, yeah, I don't have to do anything here. I just got to let it ride. I got to let this wave ride over me. She's having her crazy time. I'm letting that ride over me.
That's a great example that you shared in terms of helping him see the importance of it being experiential learning and how all of that thinking just gets in the way of being present. And when we're not present, we don't have access to all of our resources, just like that soccer player didn't have access to all of that natural knowing that he had. He'd get all caught up and then not perform as well. And by having less on our mind, that we actually get to show up more as our best selves. It's not through trying to improve ourselves, trying to fix ourselves, trying to make ourselves better, trying to do more to tweak that. It's actually by letting the mind relax and getting present that the best of us comes out.
Yeah, getting present, you know, another way to approach this, getting present would be going with the flow. And so I wish that I had used the surfing analogy in a slightly different way with the benefit of hindsight. Actually, funny enough, I worked with a professional surfer yesterday who was saying that when he's on the water, that he's having to go with the flow. He's having to sort of really be influenced by the waves in terms of the direction that he takes or the way that he chooses to surf. And so he can see how in that experience, that's for him, that's really being in the moment. He has to be, he has no choice. He said the only way that, you know, but he gets into trouble when he gets on land because it's a whole different experience and he falls, you know, he falls foul of his thought systems and gives into anxiety. And I was trying to point out to him, and actually this kind of resonated with him, and it's in the same way, it's kind of given into the flow of your essential nature. Allow yourself to be led by that flow, and you will move with those currents, and that will be you living by your instinct and your wisdom. And the only way that you really, you know, come a cropper with that is that you start to hesitate, because you allow your intellectual machinery to get in the mix. You allow your ego to influence you, and that's generally when you fall off the wave. So in a sense, it's kind of like what Mateo was pointing to in this conversation was the value of being present and going with the flow.
Yeah, he saw that. He recognized that, oh, it's just like that surfing metaphor he used earlier. And if he can really see that this is about surfing his emotional experience more gracefully, it's not about Alicia. Even if she's upset and having a rant, what you're pointing him to is that this is about him being able to allow his emotional experience to move through him and staying open to his own inner wisdom and guidance, not going into his intellectual narratives of judgment about her or how am I going to figure this out. It's just recognizing it's going to come and it's going to go. It passes. And no matter what the emotion is and no matter how intense it is for him, it's going to come and it's going to go. And once he gets a feel for that, just like with surfing, you get a feel for that, it gets easier and easier to, you know, for me staying on the surfboard, the equivalency would be staying open-hearted. It gets easier and easier to stay open-hearted, even in the face of our emotional experience. And in that open heart space, we have access to our deeper knowing. And that's what guides us when we're present. We have access to that.
Yeah, we surrender to the flow of our essential nature, which is our wisdom and GPS system.
I'm really hopeful. I'm hopeful with the process. I'm hopeful with everything. I just hope that getting back to, you know, I was about to say 9 to 5, yeah, right, more like 7 to 9, work week, and I just want to make sure that I don't lose sight of this approach.
You will lose sight from time to time. I mean, you know, I hope for you that you don't, but you would be pretty amazing if from time to time you don't. I think the important thing is to not take any of that too seriously.
I think that's a important reminder that you're giving him, that of course he's going to lose sight of what he's seeing right now. And that is the human condition, that every single one of us gets caught up at times. We certainly have a more graceful experience ongoing as we see this more deeply. I know that for myself, I am much less reactive than I used to be. I take things much less personally than I used to. But I still get reactive and I still do take things personally. There is no perfection in this. And so progress can't be measured in that way. It can't be measured by, oh, I'm going to get to a point where I'm never in a low mood. I'm going to get to a point where we never have a fight. And I think this is a common misconception for relationships, is that good relationships have no conflict in them. A good relationship means that a couple gets along all the time. And that just sets people up for disappointment. So I think it's really great that you're reminding him that this is about being on a learning curve. This is about him getting better at not taking things personally and staying in that state of presence within himself. But of course, it's not going to be that way all the time. And it's not wrong when that happens. That's part of the learning. Just like in the example of a toddler that's learning how to walk, the toddler falls over as part of that learning curve. In relationships, we're going to get into conflict at times. In fact, if a relationship has no conflict, it's likely that there's not a lot of intimacy in that relationship. And so the conflict is not wrong or bad. It just is an opportunity for us to learn and grow and see more.
Yeah, he has to be aware of the fact that, you know, he's going to slip up. We're all going to slip up from time to time. But what has to be considered is the bounce back, and the bounce back will be contingent on our level of awareness and you know, and the experiential learning and having those moments where we do, you know, trip over the hurdle. And it is, that's our growing edge at that point.
Yeah. And this next bit I thought was kind of funny because he's getting a little freaked out by how peaceful he is.
That's really interesting. I definitely feel like a different sense of awareness, like awareness with my own thoughts and just kind of like they're just coming and it's just like, all right, cool, thanks.
Right.
And I've tried to do meditation, and they do talk about that, acknowledging your, you know, your thoughts, and just like, thanks for coming, thanks for stopping by, right? And that's kind of like, oh, shit's happening. I can't even like think in my own brain right now. It's really difficult. It's like there's no inner voice that's like saying anything bad. It's just like, I don't know. It's very weird. It's like very observative rather than the narrative. I just, like I said, I hope I can prolong that, keep it going, and not have to go through some sort of traumatic event to get the understanding long term. You know, because a lot of people do that. They'll lose someone close to them, and they'll totally change. Right? They'll been an asshole, and all of a sudden, like the nicest person, and you know, really caring and endearing and. I just hope that that's not the case, and I don't think it is the case, and it's definitely not a narrative I'm going to start building up in my mind.
I don't want to be manifesting that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting to have, you know, this type of clarity and not be overwhelmed with the thoughts of what it would be like to not be, you know, in a relationship, what it would be like, you know, if she just didn't do this one thing, right? Like, it just... It's all kind of stupid in the end. It's like, who gives a shit? Like, just fucking, why are you thinking? Just live your life. So, it's interesting.
Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah, it is. I don't know what's going on in the other room, but the feeling that I feel right now is something that I wish and would hope that other people get to enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of hurt and darkness out there, and it's mostly just in people's heads.
There's so much about what he just said that I love, but first and foremost, I just wanted to pick up on what he was pointing to around this idea of what, the way that I see it, and this is how I feel like he's expressing himself here, is that he's observing his human experience. I've often of late used this analogy, this metaphor, if you like, about how life can be looked at as being one of this one big glorious computer game, and that we have all these different levels that we get to possibly go through in terms of how we might grow in consciousness. That's just one cute way I like to look at it. But I use that analogy because I feel like when we get caught up in our human experience, if we are indeed to consider ourselves spiritual beings having a human experience, I think it's nice to feel like we can observe the human experience from that spiritual level. And I think that what he was kind of alluding to was the sort of early stages of realizing that he's in actual fact having this human experience, and he can observe himself having it, but he doesn't have to take it that seriously. And he's seeing that it's all just wrapped up in his thought systems. And, you know, obviously at the end of it, he has this incredible insight about how we could all live much happier lives if we weren't so identified with the illusionary thought system.
Yeah, it's beautifully said. And it is really profound what he's sharing. I can hear that he's a little tentative about having such a quiet mind, but he's having the experiential knowing of it, which is what's most powerful, because he's going to have that as a reference point to always go back to. And then for him to reflect on his relationship from this state of mind, he's able to see and have perspective at how trivial his concerns have been. Like, he's the one saying that. He's the one recognizing, like, don't stay caught up in all of that negative thinking. Just live life, enjoy life. What's the point of all of that? Seize the moment is what I hear him saying. And then he's so compassionate, where he really recognizes that the experience that he's having, he would want others to have that experience too. To me, that's the natural outpouring that happens when we drop into that space inside of ourselves. We want to share it. We want to give from that space. So to me, it's a really authentic, genuine expression of his state of mind, and being able to see things from that state of mind, everything looks different to him.
Yeah, there's no two ways about it. He's had quite a significant insight.
I'm like really trying to think inside my head, and there's nothing going on. Yeah, but I'm also thinking this could be a problem once I get to work.
No.
It's like, oh shit, I can't think. Oh God.
No, because your level of skill set is such that you'll just do it. You'll just be and you'll just do it.
Yeah.
Like the guy who takes the penalty.
And you know what's weird is I think that's why I really enjoy work, because it does throw me in the moment, and there's so much shit flying at me that I can't pre-plan too much.
Yeah.
I think that's why I love work. I think that's why many people, like, you know, neglect their family and go to work, because that's where they are living in the moment, where they've already created this narrative. It's kind of shitty. It's going to be kind of cool being able to go to all different atmospheres and just being in the moment.
Right? Yeah, it's a superpower.
It'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. So I'm pretty excited about that. I'm going to do whatever it takes to really make sure that I prolong this this environment that we're like cultivating here.
Yeah.
And I mean, that starts with doing the things that, you know, are the self-meditation, whatever that may be.
It's kind of funny that he thinks his performance is going to decrease as a result of having a quiet mind. And I'm glad that you reminded him about the soccer player and how his performance actually improved, because I think it's quite common for people to have that misunderstanding that somehow if they have a quiet mind, they won't be able to get things done. And I think that represents all of the conditioning that we have, that somehow we have to use fear and stress and negativity in order to push ourselves forward. And that he does have a reference point for when he's at work and he's in that flow state and that quiet mind state, that he does feel that peace. But I want to emphasize that that quiet state of mind is what brings out the best in us and what allows us to excel, really.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, he's still going to bump up against the idea that his ego will be promoting this theme that with anything that feels unfamiliar, that could potentially be a problem. So it's going to be, you know, there's certainly going to be a pull back into that old pattern of behavior. And it's just a case of sticking to the understanding that he now has an experience around, he's had an insight, and to be willing to open up in that. That's not to say that there's going to be a pull back into that egoic tendency of wanting to stay with what's familiar, because what's familiar often feels safe. And yet what often feels safe can also feel a whole lot like suffering too.
Yeah, it's a reminder for him to trust the rewilding, trust that that's happening inside of him, to trust that energy, that he can be rewilded back to his natural state of love, and that's an ongoing unfolding that's never ending.
Yeah, that is constantly emerging.
That's what I love about this understanding, is that this understanding is just pointing you in the direction of, you know, of how the mind works and how important it is to have a grasp of, you know, the state of mind and the quality of that state of mind, how that has a bearing on how we operate.
Yeah, and maybe just the knowledge of how it works and how we're constructed is a reset, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Wow, did you hear what he just said?
Yeah, that is such a shift from him wanting to have the how-to manual, give me the step-by-step guide, what's the technique that's going to help me stay in this state of mind, to at this point saying, wow, maybe the understanding is the reset. Maybe the understanding is enough. Like, that's, to me, that's him really dropping in and going, wow, it's the understanding that matters.
I know, it's so amazing because he was so persistent. I think he's been persistent to a fault throughout this whole experience, and particularly within this context of looking for that magic bullet. And then all of a sudden he's like, yeah, you know what? Wow, maybe it is the understanding after all.
Yeah, to me, that's the awareness. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to dwell on negative stuff. I haven't had the opportunity to really think about, like, super positive stuff because I just am being, in a sense. But it's definitely, you can notice it more if you're a negative mindset, like previous, right? So you can notice a change more, not focusing on the negative and knowing that you used to focus on a negative and not having those internal feelings anymore, you really start to notice it. I'm not sure about the positive stuff because it's really hard to even think about memories right now.
Yeah. I don't even know that the positive stuff is important. It's just like, it's a sort of jump. It's in a sense, it's a jump in consciousness. It's a jump in awareness. And it's kind of like you get to be more, because you're kind of, let's say, coming back to your factory settings, and your factory settings are all about well-being, it seems to make sense that the negative stuff will be more amplified. Mm-hmm. You'll see that more obviously. Because the positive stuff is kind of like who you are.
Yeah.
That's your essential nature.
Right, right. And it's not like you were super positive before and now you're this enlightened being and, you know, you're missing the positivity. It's more like you were kind of sort of depressed before. You know what that felt like, and now you know that you're not feeling it. And that's when you really, I guess, you can tell the difference more, is when the past was more tumultuous, right?
And you're right. I think you do have a choice. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, as human beings, we do have free will, so we do get to decide what we want to do with our thoughts and how we want to run them.
Yeah, and I feel bad because she's like, you have a choice to be happy. You can choose love, right? And I'm just like, what the fuck is she spewing? Like, you don't, yeah, you can choose, right? And I'm just annoyed, but hey, I understand it's more real.
Yeah. And that could be just the platitude, but it could be, but there's reality in those remarks.
Yeah. I just hope that she didn't reach this level of enlightenment and I've been ignoring her for the past like 3 months. Right? That would be kind of annoying if you're just like totally chilling. You get this asshole that you're around all the time. And, yeah, it would suck. So I'm pretty sure that's not the case. But yeah, that's definitely interesting. A cool perspective to have, and a warming one, not a suffocating perspective.
Well, it sounds like Mateo is recognizing that there has been truth in what Alicia has been saying to him for the past 3 months.
Yeah, there's that distinct possibility. And there is some room for remorse, if that is the case, it would seem.
Yes. And what he's also recognizing here is he's not having to focus on being positive. He's recognizing that he's not having to try and work at feeling good enough, that this is a natural state that he can relax into. And that is very different than having to continually work on your state of mind and continually try and be in a good, positive frame of mind. How the rewilding works is that when we get rewilded back to our natural state, and as we're in that process, we become more sensitive when we get caught up in our negative thinking, and we are more sensitive to the emotional feedback. And when we understand what's going on, we realize that, oh, it's time to let my mind relax. I'm getting caught up. And it will feel worse when we get caught up, because we get an unhealthy normal, but once we're back into more of a natural feeling state of well-being, when we come out of that, we're going to notice it sooner because it's really not going to feel good. And that's actually a sign of progress. And the importance of remembering and understanding that the feelings of love, joy, empathy, compassion, like those are who we are. Those are not states that we create. That's who we are, and it's in the letting go and in the relaxing that we fall into them. And it's such a relief to recognize that.
Yeah, I was just thinking how we can, what you're saying about those moments where we get caught up, they feel more amplified because we have a higher level of understanding. It's almost like we recognize those moments of judgment, and then we begin to judge those moments of judgment, and we're really approaching that judgment with the same machinery that caused it in the first place. And we need to really, remember that there is a higher vantage point, and ultimately we will. And that's the experiential learning right there.
Absolutely. Great work, Angus.
Thank you.
Why did I allow myself to get there? Why did I allow her to get there? It's kind of like now thinking about like a new way of thinking. It's just like fucking waste of time, right? Like everything, all the worrying and everything is, and the judgment on the relationship is just kind of like, why? Because everything's spiral.
Yeah, I mean, we went through some very hard times and we got to some really dark places. And then there has been this sense for me that, yeah, why? Why was I, I was shooting myself in the foot, blaming it all on her.
Yeah.
And all I was doing is creating my own suffering most of the time. Well, all the time, in a sense.
Yeah, and you're also only strengthening the that storyline that you're creating, right? You're putting yourself in a further distance from where you want to be with the sense of, like, community and stuff, right? I'm going to hinge on that. So it's just kind of like, what the fuck? Like, why? Like I said, I'm very hopeful. I really am. And I hope that I can take, this new approach. Not new, but almost just like this natural approach of trying to not create this narrative in my mind and just be. Just like today was totally cool.
I love that he sees that it's not new, but it's just a natural approach. Because for me, that's what rewilding is. The metaphor that we're using is not about discovering something new. It's about uncovering who we are and seeing what's been there all along.
Yeah, and then it always, for me, also, this word surrender comes up. It's surrendering our old conditioning and programming to what's already there, that always was and always will be.
And he said it. He was the one that said, doing that reinforces the storyline. Like, he's really seeing it for himself. And I think that the fact that he's feeling some remorse now and going like, why? Like, to me, that's another sign of a shift in understanding. Because what made sense not that long ago when you were doing these sessions, just a few sessions ago, what made complete sense to him, all of a sudden, he's looking at it and going, why? Why would I do that? That's crazy. But that's what happens when we look at things from a new level of understanding. From one level of understanding, it makes complete sense. But as soon as you're at a new level of understanding, you look at it and go, that doesn't make any sense. I don't even know how that made sense to me before. But that's when we know it will be sustainable. When it's coming from understanding, that's a real shift that's sustainable, because it's not going to require effort to maintain and it's not going to require constant work on it. It now no longer makes sense to him.
Yeah, it's quite the system upgrade.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Without getting an understanding of being
whole,
present.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's really... it's useless and fertile to just slap band-aids on shit, because you really got to do your own healing, and the only way to do that is really to understand where your thoughts are coming from and that they are just thoughts. So it's really interesting. I want to go to the beach.
You should go to the beach.
Yeah,
go to the beach, catch the sunset.
Yeah, it would be nice, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Don't you just love Mateo? Oh, my goodness. I think he's, I don't know. It doesn't sound very manly to say he's adorable. but he is.
I have fallen in love with Mateo listening to him.
Yeah, I think that he's come so far, really. I mean, what a transformation. And I think he, he's teaching me now. I think that what he's seeing and how articulate he is in what he's seeing is really phenomenal. I'm really proud of him.
Yeah, like this has been such a great session because he was deeply impacted by the previous session, but then he had all of these how-to questions, the give me the 7 steps, give me the user manual. But within this session, it's just integrated in such a deep and profound way that now it's his words that are saying, oh, it's all about understanding.
Yeah. And wasn't it just such a simple shift in perspective?
Yeah, it is always.
A little look to the left or the right or whatever it was. And he got a whole new set of optics.
Yeah, he just dropped in. Yeah. And I feel really confident listening to him here in terms of feeling like this is something new and fresh that's real for him that will continue to unfold and integrate, and that rewilding process will continue. Thank you so much for listening to Rewilding Love. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know by subscribing on iTunes, and we would love for you to leave a review there.
iTunes reviews will steer people to this podcast who need help with their relationships.
If you would like to learn more about our work and our online rewilding community, please visit our website, therewilders.org.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week.